Welcome to the Head Ballet Podcast. This is the place to come to hear my guests discuss with me, Paul Abbott, their favourite novelty songs. The funny, the weird, the daft and the outright baffling tunes that have been skipping and dancing around in their heads for years. Everybody loves something that could be considered novel, so why not celebrate it? Emerging from the ground, zombie-like, worm-ridden and covered in rotting flesh, is my guest for this episode. Good old Jake Ward, who you've previously heard on the show talking about Roger Miller's Ode to Things You Can't Do, You Can't Roller Skate in a Buffalo Herd. Jake has brought along a bizarre horror-themed novelty song from the 1950s, which seems to ask more questions than it answers. Listen carefully to this episode and you'll hear Jake's mind collapsing as he tries to make sense of it. As always, you can find playlists on Spotify and YouTube, and the show is on Twitter and Instagram with the username at HeadBalletPod. Please share, review, rate, whatever, wherever you can. Otherwise, sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast of the damned. Jake, I'm very glad to have you back on as my official United States correspondent, because Halloween is still a much bigger deal over there than it's ever been in the UK. So has Halloween always been a tradition for you?
Oh, absolutely. As far back as I can remember, I think I've always celebrated Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Like the full-on trick-or-treating when you were a kid and then parties when you're a bit older, that sort of thing.
I remember one time, I must have been very little, like 3 or 4. I remember trick-or-treating in like a mall. Oh. And I remember always traveling to the nicer neighborhoods where you would get the premium candy, like full-size candy bars.
Oh, yes.
And then I remember being a little, like right around the time it was like going to be your one or last two trick-or-treating excursions, and I remember someone gave me a Snapple, just like a full Snapple, which was a very weird thing to be given. And then parties for sure, and just always having a lot of fun dressing up in costumes. And as I got older, dressing up as things that I really enjoyed but that nobody else really seem to pick up on, like being Jerry Sizzler from The Kids in the Hall.
Excellent.
Yeah. So Halloween's always been a lot of fun, though. And I don't necessarily love scary movies, but for the month of October, like a horror film Cactus, I get my full year's amount of horror movies in the month of October.
Excellent stuff. So what is your favorite costume you've ever gone as?
Oh, my favorite costume that I've ever gone as, when I was a kid, there were like 3 years I was Indiana Jones.
Nice.
That was a good one. And then Jerry Sizzler, of course, that was a classic one. Very comfy because you're in a bathrobe. And then I went as the pop star Lord 1 year.
Right.
That was very good. And then I went as sexy Darth Vader 1 year, and that was very popular. And that just consisted of wearing a child's Darth Vader costume.
Sexy Darth Vader. No, it was
sexy, yeah. Darth Vader. Yeah.
Nice.
And now This year I'm going to be disappointed. I think that's going to be my costume.
I think that's almost universal, people wrapped in disappointment this year, sadly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you?
In this country, it's always been, I know some people really, really love Halloween, but it was never a tradition growing up for us because it was always seen as that American thing that's sort of been imported and was a bit like, well, why are we doing this? And my parents were never keen on it, so I didn't really do much Halloween stuff as a kid. I have been to a few Halloween parties as a grown-up, and I enjoy the odd scary movie. And I will say the last time I was in fancy dress for Halloween at a friend's house, Lorraine, my partner, went as Ripley from Alien, made a costume, looked amazing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I went as, and this is no word of a lie, I went as a mummy.
Oh, how fitting.
Yeah, that should lead us nicely into you telling everyone what song you've selected for your Halloween podcast episode.
The song I've selected is the 1959 hit, maybe it was a hit, called The Mummy by Bob McFadden and Dore.
I'm a mummy. I scare people. Watch what happens when I walk up to somebody. I'm a mummy.
I am fascinated by this.
I am too. It's very bizarre. It is very weird. The more you look into the song, I feel like the more questions you have. Because on the surface, it's a very, very clear premise. It's this: there's a mummy. He wants to buy a record. He scares people. And he meets a beatnik.
Where can I buy a copy of Cookie Cookie? Lend me your coat.
Ooh, man, I don't dig that jazz. You know, throwback, sharing, modern jazz.
But which in itself is insane. And the more you pick it apart, none of it makes sense at all. But it's catchy, and it's a great song.
It's 2 minutes of true novelty recording.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, we better deal with the players on this record. So that Bob McFadden and Dore, D-O-R, which if you look at any of the associated album sleeves, single sleeves, nothing about Dore is mentioned at all, but it's clearly two people. So what do we know about Bob McFadden and Dore?
So basically, Bob McFadden, I believe, is the comedian of this dynamic duo, and Dore is the air quotes artist here. And Bob McFadden, I guess everyone probably would know him as the voice of either Frankenberry, the seasonal General Mills, cereal mascot, or as the voice of Snarf from Thundercats.
Yay!
Poor old Snarf!
Yeah, that's fun. That's a good one.
Well, that's what we'd know him for over here, because I don't believe Frankenberry's ever actually made it over to the UK. So, and certainly the adverts haven't.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
What does it taste like, Frankenberry cereal?
It tastes like a berry. It just tastes like your generic run-of-the-mill American berry.
Okay.
I would say. And wait, are you familiar with Frankenberry? Because he has two friends. He has Count Chocula.
Yeah.
And then he has Boo Berry, which is, I believe, a ghost, maybe a mummy. I think it's a ghost. I'm going to say ghost.
Sounds like it should be a ghost.
Yeah. I'm going to guess on context clues that Boo Berry would be a ghost. So that's the Bob McFadden side of the equation. And then on the Dore side, Dore would be the alias for Rod McEwen. Dore spelled backward is Rod.
Oh, yeah. So it is. I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah. He's a clever man. He was a clever man. And he, pretty fascinating guy. He's been nominated for two Academy Awards. He's been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He is kind of responsible for bringing the music of Jacques Brel, I'm sorry, to the American masses in the 60s, which, you know, if you've listened to any Scott Walker record, he's covered so many Jacques Brel songs. He also translated one of his songs into Seasons in the Sun, which became a hit in 1974 for Terry Jacks, the one-hit wonder.
Yes, and it's been covered a few times by artists across the world, that one. So it's quite well known, that song.
Yeah, it's a hit. And then he did stuff for a boy named Charlie Brown. He was mentioned in one of the Peanuts strips. And, oh, he was a poet, too, a published poet. So he was a prolific guy. And these two came together in 1959 and made a record called Songs That Our Mummy Taught Us. and this little gem was on it. And as far as novelty songs go, I mean, you're the expert here, but I assume it kind of has a little bit of everything you're looking for. It has the supernatural, it has bike horns, it has beatniks, it has blood curdling screams. It's right at 2 minutes.
So it's essentially a dialogue. Well, it's kind of a dialogue. It starts with a mummy who's explaining that he's come back from the dead in order to buy a record.
Okay, yeah. And first, hold on. Okay, we got to stop right here.
Yeah, because, there's too much to unpack.
Oh, yeah, there is. Okay, so here's my first question. Right, this mummy has come back from the dead, and he tells you, he says he was born 1,959 years ago. Now, this song came out in 1959.
Yeah.
So this mummy was born in the year zero, right?
Apparently so.
And ancient Egypt, that empire had long since died out. So the empire at the time would be the Roman Empire, but he's not Roman. This is an American mummy, I think we can assume. And so in the year zero, which a lot of scholars say doesn't even exist, it just went from 1 BC to 1 AD, a person was born and mummified. This is like, I don't know if you know, this is crazy.
Well, the implication I think here is that if he was...
yeah, wait, what is he implying?
1959, yeah. Take away 1959, leaves you with zero. Which basically, is he claiming that he's the mummy of Jesus Christ?
He very well might be. But here's the thing, though. He says that his dad was a mummy, too.
I was born 1,959 years ago. My daddy was a mummy, too. Watch what happens when I walk up to somebody. I'm a mummy.
I mean, do we know, was God a mummy? Was Joseph a mummy?
Not in the King James version of the Bible, but you never know. It might be in the Apocrypha.
Yeah, there is that period of time, isn't it, between like when Jesus was like 16 to 20-something that we're not really sure where he was or what he was doing. He was kind of taking like a 10-year gap year.
Yes, yeah.
Maybe he traveled to America and that's where he put the Ten Commandments that Joseph Smith found. Because, yeah, you know, he believed that the Garden of Eden was Jackson County, Missouri. So maybe that is our mummy, is Jesus Christ, Lord and Savior.
Well, there we go. This is a lot deeper than we ever thought. If we shoot back to 1959, then we've got a mummy who is not a... Well, he is a scary mummy, but he's got this funny little voice.
Yeah. What do you picture? Because I picture a little mummy.
Well, yeah, it doesn't seem like a huge... Scooby-Doo-esque looming out of a cave. You know, it does seem like he's... Well, I think the thing that gives away the stature of this mummy is the sound effect he makes. Can you understand this sound effect on it? What's it supposed to be?
I don't know, because he's kind of... Let's see if I can do it. It's like, I'm a mummy. And maybe he sounds normal and maybe it's all the gauze around him. Or maybe it's, you know... They took your brain out when they mummified you. Maybe it affected his speech somehow, or maybe, you know, that was how they sounded back then. We have to remember he's 2,000 years old, and people were a lot shorter then, and I'm sure they sounded different. So maybe this is a full-size mummy, but he only came up to your navel. He was like a small guy.
Possibly. But I like the bit where it says, because he's got this line, watch what happens when I walk up to somebody. Then there's another sound effect. There's the sound of his speech, and then there's a sound effect of presumably him walking, which is like a sound. That's what's that sound supposed to be?
I haven't a clue. I always thought that he had a bike horn, because I guess that's the sound they use on the record. I just thought it was, you know, like a treasure that he got buried with or something, because that would... be on point for a mummy, but I don't know. Maybe that's how he walks. Maybe he's part Tin Man or something, and he's squeaky.
That seems to be the impression that they're giving. But yeah, so we reckon it's Bob McFadden doing the voice of the mummy.
Yes.
And I should actually, just at this point, before we go any further, I should say that it came out on Brunswick record label in 1959, like you said, and it did get to number 39 on the Billboard Hot 100. So
wow.
It was issued in the UK, but I don't think it got in the charts at all. But that's the background of it to it as a single.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, number 39. Bob McFadden's the voice of the mummy. Then we have to deal with this other character that turns up, this mummy who's scaring everyone. But he's, well, even before we get to that, why is the mummy come back to life?
Right. Okay. So the mummy has come back to life because he wants to buy another novelty record. He wants to buy a copy of the song "Kooky Kooky, Lend Me Your Comb," which is a novelty song that came out in 1959 as well.
Yeah.
And why does he want to, why does a mummy want to buy this song? First off, the mummy, how did the mummy hear about this song? Where is this mummy buried that it has access to either a radio or a television? I think those would have been the only options in 1959. And so he wants to buy a copy of this song, and which got to number 4 on the charts. So that's a great marketing tool right there.
Yeah.
If you want to release a song, just reference a more popular song, and then you get those trickle-down listens. But he doesn't actually go to a record store, which
no,
I don't understand either. It's like the mummy understands that there is a song that he likes. So I would assume that this mummy knows to go to a record store, but he doesn't. And he's just accosting people on the street.
Yes. And scaring them off because he wants a copy of "Kooky Kooky, Lend Me Your Comb," which is a song I had never heard of until I started looking into this.
Yeah, I had never heard of it either. And then I listened to it, and then I was even more confused about everything going on in the song.
Yeah, because that song's based, is a spin-off of a character in a TV show. So, I mean, this could have an episode all to itself anyway.
Right, yeah, exactly. This is a Russian doll of novelty songs.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. Because "Kooky Kooky, Lend Me Your Comb" is a song sort of sung from the perspective of a character on this old TV show called 77 Sunset Strip. And the character is like kind of a wisecracking, like pre-Arthur Fonzarelli beatnik who wants to be a private eye.
Yep.
And it's this song, it's mostly spoken word. It's this woman who's asking Kooky to give her his comb so that he'll stop combing his hair and they can make out.
Kooky, lend me your comb. Kooky, Kooky.
Now you're on my wavelength and I'm reading you just fine. Don't cut out of here till we get on cloud 9.
But Kooky, Kooky.
I've got smog in my noggin.
He must have been a bit of a teen icon on this show, you know, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense that this, you know, yeah. I just don't know. I don't know. I'm entirely baffled by the pathway that the mummy takes us on into this world of "Kooky Kooky, Lend Me Your Comb." And also the fact that it's called "Lend Me Your Comb." And there was the Everly Brothers song, "Lend Me Your Comb" as well, which is a totally different thing.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. See, that's a fun rock fact right there.
I said Everly Brothers. It's not Everly Brothers. It's Carl Perkins. I'm talking rubbish.
That would have made more sense to reference, I think, unless it hadn't existed yet, than this one, which also, that song's kind of a dud. But we're at the tip of the iceberg. We are at the tip top of unpacking this song because the mummy, he scares people. And he doesn't want to. He says, I don't try to scare people. I wish people weren't scared of me. I'm a mummy. I'm just here to buy this song that I like so I can go back to my tomb and wherever he lives, right? But then he meets somebody on the street who actually doesn't scream at him. And this is the character of the beatnik. And the mummy, you would think he'd be ecstatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but instead, he just, like, doubles down on it like he wants to scare people, which goes against everything that he says.
Well, the worst thing is for the mummy here, he's basically come across this beatnik who we assume is played by Dor, Rod McKeown.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and he's come across the most laid-back beatnik guy, and clearly this beatnik-type character is a big thing for this whole comedy concept of this record and the album it belongs to as well, I think. So he's coming up and he just ends up with all this beatnik sort of slang, and he finally finds someone who doesn't scare off, but this person is such a beatnik that he refuses to listen to pop music, so won't tell him where to go and get Kooky Kooky Lend Me Your Comb.
Yeah. He's, well, also, like, okay, let's go back to the beginning of, let's just go beat by beat here with how he meets the beatnik. So just imagine there's a mummy walking down the street, 1959. He's going to, yeah, there he is. That's the sound. You would recognize that sound anywhere of a mummy walking down the street. And he bumps into a beatnik and he goes, I'm a mummy. And the beatnik goes, that's cool. So he doesn't care, right?
Yeah.
Beatnik is cool. He doesn't care. And then he goes, I'm a mummy, because he wants you to get scared. And the beatnik says,
you mean you're a mother?
Yeah.
Which, one, makes no sense, because this beatnik surely would be able to see that this is a mummy and not, I believe mother is beatnik slang for motherfucker.
Yeah.
Right? So yes. Like a little edge on this song.
It's quite hard hitting for a 2-minute novelty song about a mummy.
Oh, they cover a lot of ground here. But like this beatnik would probably be able to, just using ocular clues, be able to tell that this is a mummy. Mummies have existed for thousands of years. Surely a beatnik would recognize that this is a mummy, right? Unless he's incredibly hopped up on goofballs or blind, which we don't know. We don't have that information in the song.
Yeah.
So the mummy then is like, no, I'm a mummy. And the beatnik is just like, I'm a beatnik, right? So now they're just telling facts about themselves. They're just two people having a conversation on the street. And instead of taking the information the beatnik said and acknowledging it and adding to it, the mummy just focuses in on itself and goes, well, people are afraid of me. This is what you need to know about me. I'm a mummy. People are scared of me. I don't want them to be, so I say, but my actions indicate otherwise. And the beatnik, instead of acknowledging what the mummy said and adding to that, just goes, yeah, well, I'm hip. So we just have two people having a conversation in which neither one really acknowledges what the other one says.
Yeah.
They're just waiting for their turn to speak back and forth.
Clearly there's a, you know, 1959, there's been a bit of moral panic about teenagers, rock and roll, and sort of the emergence of like beatnik lifestyle into like the teenage world a bit. You know, this is, you know, what are we, 4 years after the Blackboard Jungle and all that stuff.
Right.
And clearly they're playing up on this character of beatniks being these sort of so laid back to the point of absolutely just complete cool and unfazedness that you end up with this.
Yeah. And I mean, good on the beatnik, you know? It's like everybody else is scared of this mummy, but this beatnik's, you know, he's laid back. He's calm. He just sees the mummy as like what they are, just a 1,959-year-old corpse. That's all they are. And also, good on the beatnik, who, you're right, is like a youthful character here, indicative of like the teenage mindset of the late 50s. You know, it wasn't cool to like older people. You know, it wasn't cool to like your parents. But like, you know, this beatnik's giving this mummy the time of day, given their crazy age difference. Yeah. So like, that's kind of cool. It's a tolerant beatnik, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing, for sure.
But he's still a jazz beatnik here. He's not a rock or pop beatnik, because obviously this guy wants Kooky Kooky Lend Me Your Comb, and all the beatnik is about is like,
man, I don't dig that jazz. You know, Brubeck, Shearing, Modern Jazz Quartet.
I'm a mummy.
Man, you gotta walk through.
Yeah, this is a jazz cigarette smoking beatnik, for sure.
They might not believe in much, but they believe in jazz.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think the mummy only knows, maybe the mummy's, I don't know, because all it knows how to say is like, I'm a mummy, I scare people, I was born this time, and I want this record. That's yeah. Like it. Going back, why is there this American mummy? right? Maybe there was a rogue faction of ancient Egyptians that were fed up with living by ancient Egypt's society standards, and they left on a boat and they traveled to America and they started their own community, maybe a place called Little Cairo or something like that. And that's where this mummy came from. But it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
It doesn't, but it does make for a very good short novelty record that more people should know about.
Absolutely. As far as like, it's weird that this one didn't really get the staying power of like Monster Mash.
I think perhaps because of, you know, it references something specific, kooky, kooky, lend me a comb. That means it doesn't have universal appeal, does it? Because after a few years, no one had cared about kooky, kooky, lend me a comb at all, would they?
Right. Absolutely not.
Whereas everyone's always working in their lab late one night.
Well, that's true. That's why I'm so tired today. Pulled long hours at the lab last night. And then everyone did the mash. Surely.
Yeah. Did you check out the B-side of the single to the Mummy single?
I didn't. What's the other song the Mummy taught them?
Well, the flip side of this, and this is, as we're talking about Russian dolls of things in these songs, the flip side of the Mummy is called the Beat Generation. It's like a cool jazz beat poetry singing thing. But
Oh, yeah. It
is basically, it's the song that Richard Hell and the Voidoids turn into Blank Generation.
Right.
You know, all of, what, 20 years later?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a really quite an influential song because it's you know, Blank Generation is one of those flagship, we are making a program about punk, let's play a song on it. Oh, it's Blank Generation. Yeah, so you've got this weird B-side that's totally influenced a really significant player in the world of punk rock in 20 years' time. You've got a song on the A-side that references something that's in the charts in America at the time, which is a spin-off from a TV show. This single has everything.
It really does. So wait, okay, so let's do the math here. So this song came out 1959. That's when this single came out.
Anything trouble my sneaky pig, I belong to the B generation. And everything's going just fine. Back on the road. I once knew a man who worked from 9 to 5.
And Richard Hell was born 1949.
Yeah.
So yeah, you think Richard Hell heard this Mummy song around Halloween one year and was like, I gotta get this record. This is a great song. And then flipped over to the B-side, and then that just was like the, you know, maybe not at the time, but it was definitely tucked away in there that he would reference later.
It's got to have been that. He must have known the record. He must have known the flip side. It's just, it's a very strange thing.
I belong to the blank generation, and I can take it or leave it each time. Well, I belong to the generation, but I can take it or leave it.
You know, he's still alive. If anyone listening to this knows Richard Hell, just ask him. Just ask him if he knew this record, because that would be cool if he did.
Yes, it certainly would. So it's one of the things, though, that makes this pick, The Mummy by Bob McFadden and Dawr, in an absolutely weird little pop, you know, pop culture article in itself. It's just got all sorts going on. How weird for literally 4 minutes and 3 seconds of music over two sides.
Yeah, I'm still not entirely sure on anything in this song because none of it makes sense whatsoever. At least with like Monster Mash, it's like, okay, I can kind of believe this. You've set the ground rules here for me. I know the world I'm living in. But with this song, there's a mummy that's come back to life because it wants to buy a super specific niche record based on a character from a TV show. And it laments that it's sad that it scares people, but it kind of expects people to be scared of it. And it doesn't really know how to face itself if it's not scaring people. And then we have this beatnik character who's just like Mr. Jazz. And it ends on a sarcastic note.
Yeah, It's fab.
Oh, it's so good, though. This is one of those songs that I feel like it was written. It was just, they rolled tape and they recorded it and they were like, that's good. That's the song.
Yes.
Like, this is like a Rolling Stone. It was like, it was done in one take. It's like most Husker Du records. It's mostly first takes.
Yes.
And they were like, done. And it was a hit. And then 20 years later, starts punk.
Yeah. This is the record that started punk.
Yeah. This is the Rosetta Stone, I think. In a lot of ways of punk rock.
Well, there we go. We've got to the heart of it then.
I don't know if we did, though. I feel like this is... I wish you could see my room right now, because I've just carefully dissected all of the lyrics and I just have long strings of red fabric just connecting all the dots here to make sense of this song, because it doesn't make sense to me at all. Also, to the same token, if there are any Egyptologists listening to this, can you confirm that that's what a mummy sounded like when it would walk?
Hey, I'll tell you, there is one good thing about the sound of mummies, because there was a scientific team at a university somewhere here in England, I think one of the Cambridge University lot, and they did a 3D print of a mummy's vocal cords, and they've got it to by manipulating air through this reproduction mummy's vocal cord, got it to make a noise, and it's just like a goat being kicked. So
is that the one? I think it's the one where the sound it makes is just like ah,
yeah, basically. Which is a bit like it's being frozen at the point where somebody killed it or something.
Yeah. Hey, man, technology is so good. I was a little upset when I found out that mummies don't actually look like the cover of their sarcophagi. Sarcophagi. I was a little upset about that, because I was like, oh, that looks cool. And I mean, mummies look cool, you know, with the tissue paper, toilet paper all around them, but not as cool.
False advertising.
So what do you think happened here? Do you think that this... So, okay, because... Hold on. There's still... Every time I think about it, I have more questions, right? So they weren't just mummifying nobodies in ancient Egypt, right? It was like, if you were a mummy, you, like, had some clout in the community. So is this royalty? I imagine it was kind of an expensive process to be mummified and then put in a sarcophagus. So did this mummy have money? It must have some money, because it wants to buy a record. So it obviously understands how society works, that you exchange money for goods and services. So this mummy has an idea how society works.
I can't put the pieces together for you. I think it remains better as a Halloween mystery.
This song it's like a Monet painting, right? It's like the further away you are,
yeah,
you're like, oh, I can see it, right? But then you, like, if you were only to look at it like an inch or two away, you're like, what's going on here? What are all these dots? Like, I can't make any sense out of any of this.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I think. Yeah. It's like the Rosetta Stone of punk, and also the musical embodiment of the Impressionist art movement is what I feel this song has been given the legacy of right now.
Right. Well, I think that's a good point at which to move away from this record before it the mummy's curse drives you mad, as it seems to be starting to. And just before we finish off then, Jake, can you offer a movie recommendation, a horror movie recommendation for Halloween viewing?
This is one of my favorite movies of all time, but An American Werewolf in London? I think that counts as a Halloween movie, because he transforms into a werewolf.
I think that's fair enough. Right. And I think that's probably one that's quite high on people's lists, and it's rightly so, because it's a classic.
Yeah, it is a classic, and it's got one wonderful scene where Frank Oz is in it, and he kind of looks like Tobias Funke from Arrested Development. So if you haven't seen that, give that one a view. Or there's also The Beast Must Die. Do you know this one?
Yes, indeed. It's great. The Beast Must Die.
Yeah, it's great. Peter Cushing, and the movie stops in the middle of it, so you can have... It's kind of like a werewolf whodunit, and the movie stops in the middle, So you can have werewolf time where you can kind of like talk amongst everyone watching the movie and sort of be like, who do you think did it? And then resume. It's kind of like a nice, fun intermission.
No, that's excellent stuff. Yeah, definitely. Beast Must Die is a key recommendation there. So we'll go with that. Fantastic stuff. Okay, well, I will leave you, Jake, to get back to whatever vile, disgusting experiments you're carrying out in your lab late at night.
All I'm doing is trying to crack the code on this mummy song. That is it.
Okay, well, let's see if applying electrodes help. So thank you very much, Jake.
Thank you, Paul. And if anyone can shed some light on this, please. I think this is a cultural discussion that we need to have.
Aren't you afraid of me? Aren't you gonna scream?
Oh, yeah. Like, help.